Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 33 for January 31st, 2009. Back in action. Okay, so it is time for the iPhone Alley Podcast. Once again, we are here gathered around the virtual round table to talk about the iPhone, iTunes, the iPod Touch, all that fantastic stuff. It's been a while. And here with me is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, it's good to be here. And clearly I'm out of practice with this. I didn't even realize the show had started. But hey, great to be here.
I just sneak up on you and get it going. That's how we get the, what is that called, a cold start?
Something like something, that. That's how you roll in the Shire, isn't it?
That's how I roll in the pod cave. And that's that's what I call it because it's really my basement, but calling it my basement sounds stupid. But it really became, you know, like a pod cave to me tonight when I came down. And of course we haven't recorded in like a month or whatever. So I came down a little early to make sure everything was set up correctly. And of course there was just piles of paper and just things were on the floor. And, you know, like some of my recording equipment was just like kind of dangling, hanging by wires. And it just, it looked like what would happen in a Batman movie if Batman, you know, kind of abandoned being Batman for a while, and the Batcave just sort of was left to rot and deteriorate, and just, you know, someone came back to set it up, and you know what I'm talking about, or am I just kind of?
I'm with you.
It's got okay. It's got that nice post apocalyptic. See if I can.
Exactly. It's as if zombies had attacked a while ago. That's what happened, actually. To be honest, it was a zombie attack, and that's why we haven't been around for a while. But you know. Actually, it was just Macworld, preparing for Macworld. We left, went and did Macworld, and then, of course, at Macworld, I got sick with the flu, which was, you know, sucky, but whatever. Jeff, did you get sick after Macworld?
Yes, I did. I'm actually still recovering,
okay.
Which totally sucks ass, but yeah. So I caught Expo SARS, and then it had to gestate for a week or so before it finally broke out in me.
Now, Adam, I should introduce you first. Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast, and Arnold Kim is here from Mac Rumors. So, did you guys catch Expo SARS, or are you guys good?
I'm good because I'm on the West Coast, see, and I don't have to get on a plane like breathing the recycled air.
I think.
That's what happened, and it was funny because when I got there, like a bunch of people who had flown out from back east and the Midwest and stuff like that, some of them were already on antibiotics. There was like a pre-Mac World.
Well, Chuck Joyner got sick, right?
Yeah, he actually went to the hospital.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
Right before.
Yeah. Well, luckily he recovered quickly, like very quickly.
No,
well,
he
was at the tail end
really
of it.
Good drugs.
Oh, well, he seemed like he recovered quickly. I didn't have a voice the entire week, so at the party that Arn and I threw, I had to make Arnold talk on the microphone, which is usually
reluctantly.
Yeah, which is usually my favorite part. So I just kind of whispered, you know, what I wanted him to say, and we just kind of went on with it. But yeah, we had a party with Arnold and. So that was awesome. So thanks to everyone who came to that. Yeah. So let's move on to the show.
I gotta say because you know the people who follow you, Michael, and the iPhone Alley people, I have to know that. You know, speaking of zombies, Michael, you at Macworld, I felt for you, man, because you were like the walking undead.
Oh, I was a zombie.
Like you did your work and you powered through and you trooped through. So your fans and the people who follow you should be grateful.
Yeah, I didn't get everything, you know, not everything turned out the way I wanted it to. I actually wanted to go up to Leo's. We had a plan to go up to Leo's place to the Twit Cottage with Daniel Brusilovsky. Of course, that morning I woke up and I felt, you know, terrible. So I actually had to call for a doctor to come to the hotel because I was genuinely concerned. But otherwise, as much as I could do, as much as I could talk, you know, to everybody, I just, you know, didn't have a voice, but yeah, it worked out.
He troopered through.
I'm gonna say that a lot of work was done by Ed Kirk. So I'm gonna make sure he gets that credit, because Ed Kirk also came out, and if it were not for him, I would have probably, well, iPhone Alley wouldn't have had as much coverage as we did, and I would have probably not have eaten for, you know, 2 days. So, because I couldn't even leave bed. Yeah, so moving on to the show, let's talk about this iPhone 3 stuff. Is that what we're going to call it? I think we're going to, I mean, not iPhone 3G.
Seems confusing.
Yeah, well, it's, well, we can call it the iPhone.
I was thinking iPhone Mark 3.
Yes, okay. We're going to call it the iPhone Mark 3. So, that's what you call it. That's, I got a new Volkswagen when I came back, so that's the Mark 4. Anyway, onto the iPhone. Let's see. New iPhone revealed and software update. That's something that, Arnold, you found, or you and your team, your lab. You guys, you want to talk about that?
Arnold's lab of zombie hunters.
Team of ninja monks.
So yeah, I didn't personally find it, but someone sent it to me. But basically, there's a 2.1 iPhone 2.1 2.1 reference in the firmware. It actually dates back for a while. It wasn't actually new with 2.1.1 or 2.2.1, was it?
Yeah, 2.2.1 is the most recent. We'll talk about
that. Yeah, so it actually didn't come in 2.2.1. It actually came in 2.0, but I guess people just didn't look for it. And I think the 2.2.1 release sort of prompted people to go digging again, and there was a reference to an iPhone model that has not yet been released. So there's been two distinct iPhone models, at least from what how Apple classifies them, and that was the original iPhone, which was, and then all the different, you know, sizes all are considered the same, you know, model based on the firmware designation. So so 1.1 was the very first one. Then the 3G iPhone came out, which, you know, added 3G
and GPS, and it was a different design and all that. So, and I'm sure there was
a
significant change. You know,
functionally different model. So it got labeled 1.2. And my impression is that the second number is sort of smaller upgrades and the first number is bigger upgrades, but that's just sort of, you know, I mean, I think it makes sense.
Well, yeah. And so, yeah, bringing up that example again with the iPod Touch was 1.1,
and then went to 2.1.
Yeah, then it was 2.1. Although, see, you're saying you think that the first number is, you know, kind of designates a more significant change than the second number, and that makes sense. You know, if you look at, you know, 2.0 as opposed to, like, you know, 2.2 or whatever.
I'm gonna throw something out there.
Okay,
maybe we're getting there already, but could that first model be more about the significance of, like, a completely different model? So, you know, I hate to bring it up because I'm so tired of hearing about it, but the iPhone Nano. Right, so the first generation Nano 2.2.1, is there some speculation that maybe it's just a whole new model, because with the one designation being the current form factor and maybe two means a whole different form factor?
Well, okay, so where I was going with the iPod Touch thing is, it's not, in my mind, it doesn't seem like as big of a change as even just moving from the iPhone to the iPhone 3G, right? Because I think all it added was, like, the hardware toggle for the sound, a different design as far as the back goes, and then, you know, I guess improved CPU and graphics hardware. Is that right, Arnold?
Yeah. So it didn't seem like a huge jump for the iPod Touch when they went from 1.1 to 2.1. Though if you look, I mean, Apple uses the same designation for all their Macs too.
Right, yeah.
And all the Macs go from only increment the first digit from what I've seen. So 1.1 to 2.1 to 3.1. So the latest iMac is like 8.1.
Yeah. Okay. So the point of it is it's not, you know, just a storage increase or anything like that. It's something significant.
Right.
We're going to see something different.
It's definitely not a storage increase, right?
Yeah. So we're going to see something different with this 2.1 thing. And so adding to that, what was the company? I don't remember.
Pinch Media.
Okay. So they do iPhone advertising for iPhone applications, right?
Yeah, and analytics.
And then they do analytics on top of it for those ads that they serve. And so for a while, they've been seeing iPhone 2.1 in some of their analytics, right?
Right, since October. And that might be an argument against it being an iPhone Nano, because it's running existing iPhone App Store apps. So,
So you're saying, okay, so with the iPhone Nano, do we want to talk about... I don't think we've talked about iPhone Nano on the show. So iPhone Nano, Adam, do you want to just summarize? Because it seems like you don't want to talk about it.
You know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the iPhone Nano.
Just seems like the iPhone. You already have one, don't you?
Form factor is so perfect. I can't imagine something smaller. You know, the only thing I could possibly fathom that Apple might be considering doing with something like an iPhone Nano would be trying to hit, you know, some sort of lower price point. But I think we're already driving there, especially with a lot of the refurbs and stuff like that. So I just don't see that being a focus for them. I know there were some rumors that it might be a phone just for, say, like the Chinese market or something like that, and I don't know what specifically about that market would appeal to, you know, a different form factor on the iPhone.
Toddlers.
Yeah. You know, I don't know where Apple's going with that. And the biggest argument against it that I see is what everybody's talking about with the apps, that, you know, it would have a totally different screen resolution in terms of pixels. And so a lot
That's true.
iPhone apps would have to be rewritten, or there'd have to be a whole separate app store. And it just seems...
Or, you can change the screen size and just have a higher density display.
Right.
But, I mean, it's already... I think the iPhone, at least when it shipped, it was certainly the highest density, 160 pixels per inch, highest density display Apple was shipping at the time. And I think the iPod... Oh, what was it? Which iPod... changed
the iPod
Nano. The iPod Nano had a higher density than that. So, no. but yeah, that's one of those things that they could change. But like you're saying, you know, okay, so the applications that are currently written, you can make an argument for or against the iPhone Nano based on, you know, the fact that they were using it in October or whatever, and the developers would have to rewrite that. And it doesn't make a lot of sense, because right now they have a really good thing set up where, yeah, all the applications will work across the iPhone and the iPod Touch. And so that's, you know, they're probably not going to be changing that too soon. So that's why they wouldn't have the App Store. Is that why what you're getting at then?
Now here's a weird thing, and I don't know why I'm thinking this, but, you know, something I guess it's because I've thought lately that Apple keeps updating the games and things like that for the standard iPods and the iPod Nanos, which have that smaller screen. And I don't know if they try and conform to that kind of screen size. I haven't heard anybody saying this, but if there were to be an iPhone Nano, I would imagine it'd be, you know, trying to hit that $99 cheaper price point, probably still have a touchscreen. But I'm wondering if it could be rejiggered to, you know, have a browser, have some of the basic features of the iPhone, but maybe not the full feature set, and not
the application store.
App store, but maybe have some UI things in there that would allow them to play the more, you know, the click wheel style games, and maybe pull that content in. It's like, hey, this thing's a phone, it's an internet browser, it's got your email, it's got, you know, maybe texting and some of the basic phone things that you want. It's not the full-blown app thing. If you want that, you know, spend the extra $100, but hey, you can play these games. I don't know. That's just a weird thought in my mind that might get around the screen size issue. But
so we're thinking, I guess we're trying to figure out what they would change with an iPhone Nano. It would be probably size as far as, you know, the actual screen real estate. And so that would trigger, you know, lack of App Store possibly. What I'm thinking is, okay, maybe that would be too drastic of a change and too much for them to handle. Maybe they would just kind of go with a thinner model, maybe more of along the lines of like an iPod touch sized iPhone with, you know, 4 gigabytes of storage or something like that. No GPS and no 3G. Could they make a change like that? Like no 3G in an iPhone, or is it 3G from here on out?
I think it'd be tough to go back to Edge. I mean, I think the main issue. I mean, the iPhone Nano doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, in general.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
So, I mean, let me just say that up front. I mean, I guess the only feasible, you know, like maybe it's a low-end iPhone. Maybe it's even an iPhone that you can get for free after, and maybe they would restrict. Maybe it would just be a phone itself and not like everything else. And I guess that's possible because, you know, Apple has sort of, they made the Shuffle, which is, you know, not the most functional iPod, but people,
right,
you know, it's cheap, and so people buy it and people like it. I mean, you know, for what it is, you know, it doesn't run games, it doesn't even have a screen, so, you know, it sort of follows Apple's sort of trying to capture, I guess, the entire iPhone market, like, or phone market from like low end to high end. So, I mean, that being said, I mean, the only other thing that I've heard sort of some sense out of all this is that, I don't know if y'all are familiar with the Palm Centro.
No.
Which is a, so, you know, Palm had the Treo for the longest time, which was a professional keyboarded phone. And then they came out the Centro like a year ago, or maybe a little over a year ago. And it was a smaller phone. The keys were actually smaller. And, you know, I think a lot of the review sites really didn't like it because the keys were small. But as it turned out, it was actually apparently, I think it's a very popular phone amongst women because they have smaller fingers and whatnot, and they actually find it very comfortable. So, you know, that's the only other sort of angle, I guess, on a smaller, cheaper phone.
Right. And I think, trying to remember back to one of the articles we wrote, I can't find it. But one of our quote-unquote sources, he hasn't really proven himself really at all, but I know the guy, and so he knows someone else in Apple. he said that, you know, according to his guy, that it would be an Edge phone, and there would be no GPS. And that was really, I mean, again, that's the only thing that really makes sense as far as, you know, outside of having to rewrite just like everything, because it's so size specific in a phone as opposed to just on a Mac where the screen size can change and there are only so many things that actually have to stretch, you know, to the screen. So, I don't know. I don't see a reason for an iPhone Nano personally. I think that, you know, $200, I think with what we're seeing right now as far as iPhone sales, what did we hear? Jeff, do you remember how many iPhone 3Gs were sold? And was it, I don't know, like four, was it four or 6 million?
I don't remember about 4 million, but it was the total number of iPhones sold through the end of the quarter was almost 14 million.
Okay, yeah. So I think that, and, geez, how many? Okay, there were 6 million original iPhones sold, like 6.5 million. So we're seeing a big spike in, you know, iPhone sales, obviously. And I think a lot of it has to do, well, most of it has to do with the price point, obviously. So I think that the price point is at, you know, at a level that most people can do it. And, you know, I talk to people every day who are actually considering the iPhone. And I just, you know, talked to a friend earlier this week who said, you know, should I get an iPhone? You know, I'm really thinking about doing it because it's at a price that I can afford, but, you know, have to move some stuff around. But, you know, $200 is something I can do. And so, you know, I think that right now Apple doesn't really need to cut prices any further. And, you know, the iPhone as it is, removing features from it isn't necessary because everything is obvious. You know, that's part of the reason the iPhone is so successful is because everything is pretty obvious in how you use it. And one feature doesn't get in the way of another feature, you know, as in most phones with complicated menus and all that stuff. So, and personally, iPhone Nano doesn't make sense. So is that the consensus here?
A little bit, but I'm going to disagree on one point, and this is the only way I could see Apple bringing this product out. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Michael, because I think it's all related to sales. It's all related to what Apple is seeing and trending, and who knows what they're seeing now. But the rumor right now is that while do you guys listen to the fourth quarter, the results call at all?
Yes. I did not, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically they said in there, you know, iPhone sales compared to last year, we're up like 88%. It was something astronomical for that quarter. But looking at this quarter with the economy and all the other factors, you know, and a lot of the analysts are saying Apple's seeing a pretty significant drop off toward the end of the quarter and the first part of this next quarter they're moving into in iPhone sales. And you have things on the horizon like the Palm Pre that's getting a lot of buzz and things like that. So if Apple is at all concerned about not sort of maintaining that top phone position, which gets them a lot of press and sort of a lot of cred in a new market that they, you know, a year and a half ago, they weren't in. They might do something like that to stay on top. So, you know, as Arnold mentioned, if Apple can put out a phone that maybe has all the same features, I would think if you put out a phone that had all the same features of the original one, you know, first generation iPhone, just the browser, the iPod was touch-based, had the touch interface, I don't care if it's smaller or not, but if you put that phone out, and I think you have to do the 3G. I'm with Arnold there. I don't think they can go back to Edge at this point. But imagine a 3G phone that has the iPod, it has the browser, it has the email, it has everything the original iPhone had except the App Store. You know, and you said this is a $99 phone. It's our entry-level phone, subsidized. It's going to be free. They're going to see another huge jump in just number of people owning an iPhone, and to be able to walk out and say, you know what, we have 2%, 3%, 4% of the market. We sold another 10 million phones. That could be huge. So if that's something Apple feels they need to maintain or wants to maintain, they might have to do that product just for that reason. And that's the only reason I can think of.
You know, I'm not seeing the whole iPhone Nano thing happening at all. And there's several reasons for this. And the first is that if you make a phone that does not have access to the App Store, you're cutting off a substantial revenue stream. So Apple's not going to do that. Second, during the conference call, I think it was Peter Oppenheimer said, Apple is not interested in that bottom feeding low end of the market. So
right. With
that in mind, why would they turn around and make a product that does exactly that?
Well, none of their products reflect that. And that's actually something I was thinking about as he was describing that. I don't think that Apple is in, you know, that's not what they do with their products. You know, there's certainly a market for, you know, a netbook that, you know, takes out all these, you know, whatever features, you know, just a stripped down computer or just a stripped down laptop, you know, a $500 laptop or whatever. There are a lot of people who would buy a stripped down $500, you know, Mac laptop. But is Apple going to do
that? Yeah, that's called the iPod Touch.
Right. Well, is Apple going to do, you know, make those kind of cuts in their products? I don't think so. And I think, you know, because they make a lot of, they make a big deal out of, you know, even just having a full-size keyboard in the MacBook Air. And it is a full-blown computer, all, you know, aside from the fact that it's, you know, got a lack of ports and it's kind of, you know, whatever. But it's a solid, you know, it's a product in and of itself. It's not, you know, just kind of a bunch of things pulled out of a laptop. So I don't think that they're going to go with that kind of compromised iPhone product.
I'm going to go a step farther and say, not only do I not think they will do it, I am certain they will not do it, which is actually probably the kiss of death. So come June, that's when
we're going to see the iPhone Nano come. Now I changed my mind now that Jeff said that.
I want to be clear about what I said. I was trying to just give an example of how I could imagine Apple even considering to do that type of product. Personally, I'm agreeing with you guys. I don't think Apple is going to do that product. I think when they get to that point where they're looking at, you know, or not when they get to that point, if they ever get in the mindset that, hey, we need to just gain a bunch more market share, they might have to consider doing that type of product.
Yeah. Okay. So do we want to talk about the, we're going to start off with the iPhone 3 and just kind of moved off into the iPhone Nano. So there is, you know, a product, supposedly the 2-1 product, that is a different iPhone than we're seeing. So it could be an iPhone Nano, but it could also be this, you know, quad core crazy gaming machine iPhone that Jason O'Grady thinks we're going to see.
You know what else it could be?
A robot?
It could be a robot. Now, another thing it could be, and I'm just tossing this out because I love just throwing stuff out to mess it all up. There are certain markets where you cannot have certain iPhone features, and I'm going to use Egypt as an example. It's against the law in Egypt for the general populace to have a GPS, which means that there's no GPS on the iPhone in Egypt. All right, so how do you differentiate the iPhone products that have to be feature limited because of local laws? Maybe you just use a different number, like 2, 1. Wow, I just ended the podcast right there. How about that?
I was going to say, well, if you're going to come up with a product name, I would say iPhone suck, but we're talking about version numbers. I don't know. I think that would go with the assuming that the second number after the comma is, you know, kind of a more detailed, you know, kind of minor changes within a product line. I would say it's, you know, going to be a, you know, I mean, they may not even change that at all for, you know, you know, a feature that they take out for that kind of reason. They may not even designate it all for that. They may,
sure. And I have nothing that tells me that's what they're doing.
Right.
I'm just throwing that out because I love just mixing things up for people.
Yeah. So what do we get? What do we think about the quad core? Is it quad core? Four core. Yeah. Quad core.
O'Grady said quad core.
Yep. O'Grady said quad core.
Well, why stop there? Octo. I want my Octo iPhone. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, where's the Octo iPhone? I want to see my 3 gigahertz G5 iPhone. Or are we not going to go back to that? So
you know, as long as they're going down that path, I want it to be a subdermal implant, and I want to be able to dial with thought. Actually, no, I don't. I'd get in a lot of trouble with that feature.
You would get in a lot of trouble with that. Where is Jason O'Grady? I should have grabbed Jason. You guys...
he's getting a subdermal implant.
So, really, the honest question back to you guys on that is, does anybody here on this panel, or is any of us sitting around thinking that, oh my God, my iPhone is so underpowered and I haven't seen, you know, amazing apps come out on it and...
Well, okay. You know, so here's the
and
thing.
Wouldn't it be cool if my battery lasted only 20 minutes?
Wouldn't it drive the price up, or are these chips, you know, I don't know what chips he's specifically talking about because I didn't see the article, but.
Okay, so he's talking about stuff from Imagination Technologies and their, right? Imagination Technologies?
I think the, well, there's two parts to that. I mean, the multi-core iPhone stuff, and then he didn't specify, I think, one way or the other.
I think
but
he did. But go ahead. Yeah, he did. O'Grady also points out that Imagination Technologies will be announcing.
Yeah, but that was
their
just
graphics
a
processor.
Coincidence.
Okay. It's just a coincidence. Okay, go ahead.
So Imagination Technologies, which makes a Power VR chip, which currently powers the iPhone and iPod Touch, announced that they're, I guess, had multi-core GPU coming in the future. But that's the GPU. That's not the processor. So that, you know, the iPhone uses the ARM. A version of the ARM processor.
Right.
And then, so the ARM Cortex is a multi-core ARM processor coming out, you know, I don't know, the official word is late this year or 2010 even, but, you know, Apple's invested a lot of money into their own ARM design teams. So
right, with
you know,
the Mark Papermaster stuff.
Well, yeah, he, I don't know if he has had ARM experience, but with all the, they bought that company,
PA Semi.
PA Semi. And they were ARM people.
Yes.
They, you know, they had a lot of ARM experience.
Yep.
You know, I mean, who's to say that Apple couldn't introduce an earlier multi-core processor, though that's giving them a lot of, you know, you have to give them a lot of credit for that. But it's, you know, I heard the multi-core iPhone talk also, and I actually believe it's true. I don't necessarily think quad core per se, but maybe even two core.
Dual core would make more sense for the iPhone, because this is what I'm thinking about. The iPhone, essentially right now, the way they have it set up, the iPhone is running only two like groups of processes, if you want to group them. You've got the third party stuff, whatever you're running, if you're actually running a third party application. You can even just say an application that you have in front of you right now. So you have the application, then you have the phone and all the core functionality of the phone that runs in the background. It would make a lot of sense, and it would work perfectly with the way that OS X is set up right now to say, all right, all the phone stuff go on, you know, processor one, and all the, you know, app stuff that's going on in front of you, that goes on processor two. That just makes it so much better as far as performance goes. I think it was Bertrand Serlet did a demo, or one of those guys during WWDC was talking about the difference between, you know, increasing megahertz as opposed to adding another core, because increasing megahertz increases power consumption by quite a bit, but if you can knock down, you know, the megahertz a little bit and add another core, you're only increasing your power, you know, just a little bit, as opposed to tons with a megahertz increase. And you can do a lot more with, you know, multi-core, you know, as long as the OS is set up that way. And as long as, you know, if you're just saying, you know, this process go here, as opposed to, you know, threading and all that complicated stuff that probably wouldn't happen on a phone, it would make a lot of sense.
I mean, I don't think it makes sense to split it so logically. I think the OS can handle it, and that's all what Snow Leopard will do, which... Of course, the iPhone will run Snow Leopard because it runs OS 10 or a version of OS 10.
Right. So you're not thinking, how do you think that would, you just think it would, I mean, how do you think it would work out with, you think a multi-core, just like a two, like a dual core processor. Why do you think the ARM Cortex?
That's because it's the only multi-core ARM that's been announced.
Okay. Okay. So that's just the one that you mentioned in your article around the time.
And that was just guessing. Yeah. I mean, that's not saying, no one said for sure. No one said, oh, okay. You know, I've heard that this is a Cortex, but you know, there's no other multi-core ARM processors that I'm aware of.
Yeah. But yeah, back again to, you know, the fact that, you know, it is an iPhone and it's, you know, only has so much battery life. And it's always been one of the big complaints about, you know, the iPhone is battery life. Again, you know, getting, you know, two cores, you have a lot more performance for a lot less, well, not as much power consumption increase, or you can even, I don't know how they would do it. I'm not an engineer. But, you know, you may get even, you know, better battery life with a dual core. Who knows? But it does, I think it makes a little bit of sense as opposed to increasing the megahertz in a phone.
Oh, yeah. Michael, just in general, I mean, that's the way the industry is going. So it just makes sense. It's logical that the next generation processors running iPhones are going to be multi-core processors. We've gotten away from the processor speed thing. I think we've kind of, you know, Moore's Law has played out and stuff like that. And the way we're going to get around that and continue to meet Moore's Law is with these multi-core processors. Yeah, they're not going to be, you know, the megahertz, we're not going to see that megahertz number going up, but we're going to see the cores going up and up and up and up, you know, now. So we're now in a core race, is how many cores can we cram in a chip?
And I think a lot of that has to do with, you're talking about Snow Leopard. Snow Leopard has the OpenCL stuff, which is, Arnold, you were explaining that before we started the show. It's basically just kind of bridging multiple, you know, either CPU or GPU processor units to get an overall speed increase. So using maybe GPUs for more specialized, you know, more graphic stuff that really isn't done in an interface type of thing, but maybe more so in a game, bringing that into more general purpose computing, you know, for an extra, you know, performance increase in whatever you're doing. So there's OpenCL, obviously rumored in a new version of the iPhone. Is that something that has to come in hardware, or can that be done in software? That's just a software thing, right?
The OpenCL stuff?
Yeah.
It's taking advantage of existing hardware.
Okay. So Imagination Technologies, back to those guys. Apple invested a lot of money in those guys. They're manufacturing the Power VR 3D chips that are used in the iPhone and iPod Touch right now. And so I'm looking through here. They posted some job openings that might point to an OpenCL acceleration in future models. Okay, so it looks like you may need to have the acceleration kind of built in for that kind of, for more mobile type of chipset as opposed to a, you know, a desktop chipset. So, you know, stuff is pointing toward that as well. So are we thinking iPhone 3? Arnold, you think iPhone 3 is coming soon, right?
I don't know how soon. I mean, you know, June is sort of where the safe bet.
We're thinking June. I'm thinking, if anything, June would make sense. I don't know. If you look back at, you know, obviously no one thinks they need a new iPhone right now because they all just bought an iPhone 3G. So that's really the only thing that made me think, oh, maybe we will see an iPhone Nano in June because it's something that, you know, not the people with an iPhone already wouldn't need
Sorry.
One of those. Ooh. That's fine. But, you know, and so an iPhone Nano would make sense, but who knows? Phil Schiller said during an interview, I think it was like with the New York Times, right? David Pogue. Yeah. That, you know, they have a certain timeline for each of their products, and June, July is kind of the iPhone, you know, time for for an iPhone refresh whenever they have new products for that. So I don't know, maybe we'll see something at WWDC if we have a lot of these new technologies in there, such as the OpenCL stuff, multi-core stuff, you know. It'd be a good time to introduce that. Say, we have a new iPhone and here's the new stuff in here. And, you know, here is what we have for you developers to work on for your, you know, the next versions of your applications on this new phone. Then I wonder if that creates, well, I guess it wouldn't create you know, a gap between, you know, having these applications that'll work with the iPhone 3 and the rest of the applications that work with the rest of the products, because Apple, you know, whatever they do, for the most part, it kind of falls back gracefully, right? So we may just see a performance increase in, you know, the new applications.
I mean, my understanding, Michael, is a lot of these technologies are kind of underlying OS technologies, and a lot of the hooks and things like that for them are part of the Xcode that's out there now. You know, I'm not a huge Xcode developer, but, you know, the two technologies Snow Leopard are going to bring that are going to really help with this stuff is, you mentioned the multi-core stuff, which is what Apple's calling their Grand Central, basically right. Making the whole operating system multi-core aware and being able to capitalize on multiple cores within the chipsets. And then the OpenCL, which is the technology that allows the operating system or applications to grab onto spare GPU cycles,
right.
So graphics processor unit cycles that aren't being used to drive graphics things that are just sitting there idle, and adopt those for CPU type processes and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons why I chose to buy a MacBook Pro versus a MacBook was that you have that whole extra GPU processor in there that's potentially sitting idle, and I'm hoping
right.
for future proofing that Snow Leopard's going to be able to just grab that whole processor, that whole GPU, and, you know, it's almost like having a third core in there, or, you know, third core in there.
Yeah, hopefully they figure out a way to get it so we can switch between our graphics chips without logging out too. That'd be nice.
That's actually doable, is my understanding, with those NVIDIA chips, and it's happening on other platforms, and it's just something Apple needs to enable in the OS. I'm hoping we see that even before Snow Leopard chips.
You know, I think we could, this is totally a tangent, but I think what they're doing is they're just kind of, you know, the reason they're logging out and logging back in is the same reason you would do that sort of thing if you turned on like Quartz GL, and I don't know if you know what that is, but it's just a different, you know, it's adding on to what the graphics processor is doing, and it depends on restarting each application that you want to use it with. So if you could somehow trigger your second graphics chip to switch over, you would, without actually logging out and doing it through the correct process, you would only get, you know, the added benefits of that graphics chip if, you know, in applications that you newly start or quit and restart. I don't know. I'm just, I have nothing to back that up with. That's just my speculation, and it's a total tangent. So, but I think it's doable, you know, and like you said, other platforms are doing it already. So moving on, do we want to talk about Steve Jobs and Apple and Macworld? I think that's kind of been beaten to death in other podcasts.
I've taken an oath to completely stay off of it on my show, just in terms of I'm not going to speculate on Steve Jobs' health or the reasons for his leave or anything like that. I'm happy to talk about what we think Apple might look like or the future of Apple if Steve Jobs shouldn't come back, because, you know, I do think that's a possibility. But, you know, as to why he's on leave or his health situation, I'm just not personally choosing to talk about it.
Okay. Well, so I'll just...
Good for you, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, that is good, to be honest. Let's just say that, you know, if for those who haven't heard, I think right before the keynote, Apple and I think it was Steve himself put out a letter saying that he's recovering from a hormone imbalance and that he's going to remain Apple CEO. Then later on... I guess, was it from Steve or was it just, yeah, it was from Steve again saying, you know, that he was going to be taking a leave of six months, right?
Right.
To recover because his condition was more serious than, you know, he had initially thought. So, you know, he said he's going to come back. A lot of people have speculated that he may not come back and it doesn't look good for Apple. Honestly, even talking about it right now is just kind of like, I don't know if we want to even talk about this. So do we think that Apple is going to, I mean, let's say that Steve Jobs doesn't come back. Do we think Apple is going to, are we going to have the same Apple as we have
yes,
right now?
Yes, we are.
We are? You think so?
Yeah. I think we have at least 5 years ahead of us before we see major changes in how the company runs and the types of products it releases. I mean, if you look at what Steve Jobs has done, what the board has done, what all the management team has done, these are not stupid people. And they've known for a long time that Steve Jobs won't be there forever. And that has nothing to do with whether or not he's healthy. Just no one can stay forever. So they've put everything in place a long time ago to make sure that they have a clear roadmap moving forward, that they have a clear vision, and that it follows what Steve Jobs wanted. And I have no doubt that as soon as Steve said, yeah, you know what, guys, I need to take a break, they broke the seal on the big plan that says, here's what we do next. And they're just moving forward, and it's going to be just fine. And they have tons of cool products in the pipeline, because that's what these companies do. And we're going to see interesting things coming out, and it'll all be fine.
So you don't think we're going to see any just weird decisions coming from Cupertino? Because I know for a fact that he's an extreme, I think you all know this, that he's, you know, the biggest micromanager there is. You know, that he looks at everything. I mean, I was talking to someone who works on MobileMe, and, you know, Steve Jobs approved the final design of, you know, the icon for MobileMe. You know, he gets, you know, whatever amount of designs, and he looks at them all and he says, you know, this is the one I want. You know, I think that he approves a lot of that stuff. And I think someone has gone, some people have gone as far jokingly to say that, you know, he even approves every single iPhone application. which would make sense as far as, you know, how long it takes for an application to be approved. But then again, I don't think we would see as many applications as we do if it were him, in fact, approving those.
Well, keep in mind, even if Steve Jobs does not come back to the company in the same role, he is still involved in major decisions.
Oh, yeah. Till the day so he dies, I think like he'll be you know, putting his hands in as many projects as possible, you know, making sure that they're going, you know, the way he wants them to. And I'm sure there are a lot of people at Apple who, you know, that has either rubbed off on enough people, or he's found some people who are as crazy about, you know, those sort of details as he is. Because, I mean, he's not stupid. He knows what he's doing. He knows that eventually he's going to be leaving and whatever. And, you know, turning it over to whoever to run and take care of, you know, these little details that he takes care of. So it'll be interesting. Let's just leave. I guess we'll just leave it at that. Because again, I think everybody's beaten that one to death. So let's move on to Macworld stuff, because we haven't convened since Macworld, and it was great seeing you all. By the way, that was a lot of fun, even though I couldn't really talk that much. I did get a chance to meet with Will Shipley of Delicious Monster. I think it was the night before the keynote. He showed me He told me about three applications. He showed me one of them. The first one was a Delicious Library, just kind of like a widget for Delicious Library. And it's just basically something that would sync with your Delicious Library. You'd get all your stuff. You'd get to see it all on your phone. You wouldn't really change it. You wouldn't really manage it. You just kind of have it and say, oh, look what I have. And, you know, you can do this and this and this. Or you can just compare what you have, rather. So that's cool. The second thing that he talked about was that he's going to be working on a barcode scanner. So right now with Delicious Library, the cool thing is you can use your eyesight camera to scan in the barcode from whatever you want to put into Delicious Library. So this second application will be just kind of using your iPhone, or yeah, just your iPhone really, because it's the only thing with the camera, as a remote scanner for all your stuff. So instead of having to bring all your stuff to your computer, you can just go around your house scanning all the stuff that you want to scan, and then that goes right back to the computer. So the iPhone really isn't doing anything except for providing the camera and doing the Wi-Fi handshake and sending of the image back to Delicious Monster and Delicious Library. Delicious Library is doing all the hard computing work as far as, you know, figuring out what the barcode is and all that stuff. So that's I do not know if he's going to be charging for that one or not, but the third one, and that this third one is even further off, and will kind of depend on, I think, maybe some extra stuff in the SDK. I'm not sure. And this is definitely going to be a pay app, is just a barcode scanner in general, because he's, you know, he's the guy who just kind of pioneered being able to scan barcodes with your EyeSight camera. And as far as I know, if any of you guys know whether or not you can focus with your EyeSight camera or not, can you? Is it fixed focus?
EyeSight has a great focusing mechanism.
Okay. At least the standalone one did. The one built-in
one I don't know about.
Oh, yeah, my fixed focus referred to the camera in the iPhone, not the EyeSight, sorry.
So do you know whether or not I assume it doesn't focus, really. It doesn't seem like there's any room for that sort of mechanism in there. But he just kind of led on that, you know, he knows how to scan in barcodes with a fixed focus camera. And so his goal is, excuse me, I'm still recovering too, is to do a barcode scanner that's remote and completely separate from your computer. And so you can go to the store and scan in, you know, whatever CD at Best Buy or something like that and see if you can get it cheaper on Amazon. Of course, you can get it cheaper on iTunes or whatever. But, you know, scanning whatever in, checking it out on Amazon or look at it on the internet and see, you know, whether or not you can get it cheaper and actually buy it right from there. That's his third application. So that's what Will Shipley with Delicious Monster is working on. That was very cool, and I was glad to get that first look at the application and what he's doing with that. So did you guys hear about this, or he was demoing that at the booth, right?
I didn't get by their booth, unfortunately. I saw it. It was a great-looking booth. I walked by it.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
But yeah, and to confirm, the built-in EyeSight is a fixed focus lens. The original one, you know, the little lipstick one, I think is still very popular because it has a great focusing mechanism actually in it.
Yeah.
It'll actually focus very well. And I have that luckily to use with Delicious Library, and it works awesome because it, you know, it can just focus.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to do that. I started playing with Delicious Library a little bit ago, and it was tough getting that stuff scanned in. Then again, I was working with some Apple boxes, and a lot of the stuff on the Apple boxes are just insanely small. I don't know why they're so small. But so I think he was demoing at least the first Delicious Library application at the booth. So that was one of the cool things at Macworld.
Very cool. Before we move too far away from this, Michael, did I give on this show one of my listeners gave me the $2.99 fix for the fixed focus lens on the iPhone. So if you're trying to use like Snapper or some of the barcode apps that are out there now and you're having trouble getting barcodes, if you go into like a drugstore, like, you know, Walgreens or whatever, they sell usually up by the counter these little $2 magnifiers, you know, for like reading pill bottles and things like that.
Right, yeah.
And I always say this wrong. Fresnel lens?
Fresnel.
Fresnel. See, I screwed it up. Fresnel lens. And you can get one of these and just hold it right up to the lens of the camera. It's a little tricky because if you get towards the edge, it distorts a little bit. But once you get it right and kind of figure it out, it works great, and it's something you can slip in your wallet or whatever. I carry one in my wallet now, and it's great for taking macro pictures, and it's like a $3 fix.
That's cool. I haven't heard that. That's really cool. We're going to have to...
It's not perfect. It's not, you know, nobody think that this is going to, you know, suddenly make the EyeSight camera a macro lens, but, you know,
you walk around with one of those, like, around a chain around your neck, and, you know, your buddies ask you, you know, if you're crazy, and you say, no, it's for my iPhone.
It does work for these barcode apps, and the trick is you need to, when you fill the frame, get it about filling about 3/4, you know, don't try and fill the whole frame, but about 3/4 of the frame for most of them, and it'll be able to recognize the barcode maybe 80% of the time, whereas you're lucky with the native camera if it's like 20% of the time. So
cool.
You know, you can get even better images if you get a really nice Fresnel lens, like from a scientific catalog. The ones that you get at the drugstore, the $3 jobbies, those are just formed out of plastic, so they're not going to be as focused. But if you get a really good Fresnel lens, I mean, you can let me qualify this. I understand that you can actually burn holes through concrete with them and do all kinds of amazingly destructive things with them. So I hear.
So you hear. You've never done that, though.
I have no recollection of that.
Okay, let's move on to the keynote itself. Did you guys think that Phil did a good job? What did you think of Phil's keynote? Because, of course, Steve Jobs didn't do the keynote.
I thought he did fine.
You know, I think he was given crap to deal with, and he did a great job with what he was given.
Who was it that said they weren't going to applaud?
There were several people saying...
Who was the one who started it all? Jeff, I think you tweeted about it.
Silent Keynote?
Yeah, Silent Keynote. Who started that?
That was Lisa Snyder King.
Did she do the Silent Keynote, or did she clap for Phil?
Actually, she didn't even go to the keynote.
Oh.
She decided that she was just kind of done with that, with the whole keynote thing.
Gotcha. Well, in spite of all that, I didn't really notice a lack of applause, really, from where I was anyway. It seemed like Phil did a pretty good job. Of course, I was frantically live blogging and, you know, having someone else take pictures and doing crazy things. So I wasn't really paying attention to everything. It seemed like when I look back at the video that Phil was a little nervous doing stuff. But, you know, in the beginning, and he kind of got into a groove at some point. And he had the guy who did the iMovie redesign, he was really good.
Right.
And so, you know, everything there was really cool as far as iLife. That was awesome. But obviously the significant stuff for iPhone is the I think the iTunes Music Store, variable pricing and 8 million DRM free tracks right then and there. Amazing. I'm so happy. I was just so happy when I heard that. If that was the only thing, I would have been really happy with it.
I don't have to go to Amazon anymore.
I don't have to browse iTunes
and then go to Amazon.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. The only thing that really worried me, and I think it worried everyone, was the variable pricing thing. Because we're thinking, oh, okay, so we're going to see, you know, tons and tons of, you know, what is it, $1.39 was the high end. And what was it? I don't know. Do you guys remember what the I can pull this up, of course.
$69.99 and $1.29.
$69.99 and $1.29. Yeah, you got it. Okay. So I mean, it doesn't seem like I'm looking at all the stuff in the store. As far as what I've seen, I haven't seen anything over 99 cents so far.
I haven't run across it. I haven't run across too much 69 cent stuff either, but I haven't been really looking.
Have you seen any 69 at all?
I haven't.
I haven't yet, but I haven't again really been looking.
So. Honestly, 99 cents is a fine, you know, price point. So, I'm not too displeased that we're not seeing any 69.
The labels
stuff.
Right now control that, right? It's not Apple, so the labels can say we want this at 69, and Apple just does it. I mean, that was kind of my understanding.
Well, you got to think that Apple strongly advises. The labels to stick with the 99 or the 69.
Yeah, I think the labels have all the say on which tier it goes into.
Yeah, but so far it's fantastic, and I think what is it by
March?
March we're gonna have all the songs DRM free, and yep. So not only DRM free, but it's the 256. KBPS AAC, which is a really, 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 really good quality. From, you know, I make myself out to be some kind of audiophile. I think they sound fantastic. I mean, I'm not one of those people who goes and does the FLAC and whatever. But I do, you know, I can detect the bad, you know, MP3 stuff, and this is great stuff. So I was really thrilled about that. And the second big thing for this is specifically for the iPhone, the iTunes Wi-Fi Music Store is now just the iTunes Store, and it works over 3G. Are you guys excited about this? Is this a big deal? I thought it was a big deal, at least for me.
I have a first-generation iPhone, so I don't care.
Well, you can do it over Edge.
Oh, you can?
Have you tried it?
No.
Yeah, you can. Well, I mean, I don't know.
It was 3G or
plan
Wi-Fi
some time for that, Adam.
Yep. Plan. Yes.
A lot of time.
Block some time off.
Yeah, a lot of time, exactly.
And download an album and let us know.
Especially at the higher quality, you know, 256.
Oh yeah.
AAC, bigger files, even.
Well, yeah. You can. I mean, as far as I've seen from all the reports we've gotten, You can browse the store, at least, and preview stuff over Edge. Who knows if it's even going to let you buy something over Edge?
I think you can.
Okay. It'll take a while.
You know what's funny about that is I always thought that why didn't they always from the beginning just have the ability for me to browse and buy and it just kind of tag that song and then when I
or just cue it
think back when you get home, why wouldn't I just drop my phone in and boom, it downloads everything right when I'm on my home connection and throws it in there?
I think that would be too confusing to people. Honestly, if you sit there and it says buy, you think that you're going to be buying that right now. And why would that make sense? You know, it doesn't make too much sense for it to come
now,
later
on. Like, prior to them saying, you know, well, we can't have it on Edge for whatever the reasons were, I always thought that they could have probably made some amount of money by saying, hey, look, you know, you can make the purchase when you're out and about. You have that impulse buy. You know, we're not going to download it because of speeds or whatever. And you know, it's a moot point now, but I always just thought in the back of my mind, it was always weird that they didn't figure out some way to just, hey, it goes into your iTunes, and when you sync your iPhone back up, hey, it'll be there on your computer waiting for you.
All I can think of is all my friends who are gonna, you know, who would have complained to me and said, you know, I didn't get my music on here. I don't understand. You know, I think that would be a little too confusing to people. On the other hand, I think allowing you to browse the store and, you know, having a pop up when you hit buy say, you know, you're over Edge, hop on Wi-Fi or go home to buy the music, that would make sense. But over 3G, it totally makes sense. It's an awesome thing to have. I don't know how much music I'm going to be buying over 3G. Then again, you know, having it DRM free is one of those things that really makes it compelling for me to start buying music with the iTunes music store as opposed to how I get my music otherwise.
What they need to do is buy Shazam and integrate that into the apps, you know, the iTunes store.
You read my mind.
Let you buy right, you know, from listening to that.
Like, well, you can. Shazam does the, if you tag something with Shazam.
Yeah, it'll link over, but they should just integrate that. I mean, Apple should just buy that technology and integrate it right in there, and then everybody has it.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I would love that. Yeah, absolutely. Other thing for the iPhone during the keynote, a keynote remote application was released for iWork09. And that's cool. For me, anyway, because I like doing the presentations.
It works really well.
You've tried it?
Yeah, I bought it right away. Well, I bought it right after I got my copy of iWork and started playing with it.
It only works with the new iWork.
Yeah, you have to have iWork 09. And it's really nice. If you put it in the landscape mode so that you can watch your current slide and your upcoming slide, that's pretty cool. And if you have it in the portrait mode, you can look at your slide and your notes.
Yeah.
And I thought the application worked really, really well. I saw a lot of people complaining about latency issues, and all I can figure is there's something wrong with their system because my computer is like the worst on the planet for latency because I'm always running so much crap and I have so many beta applications running. My Mac feels like it's sluggish all the time, and I had no latency issues at all.
Okay, so it's 99 cents. It's right. It's in the App Store right now, and you have to have the new iWork 09 for it to work. I've played with it, and here is my take on it. I don't really like it just because of the way that for a few reasons. One, because I think to switch between landscape and portrait, you have to actually go back and do a settings change, right?
Yes, that would be nice if it used the accelerometer.
I understand.
iPhone, it would do it.
I understand why they wouldn't want to have, you know, an accelerometer cued flip of the orientation, you know, because if you're presenting and you're moving your hands and whatever, you don't want it to flip. But, you know, maybe just a simple lock for people who do want that to be locked in place would make more sense. So that's one of the little itty-bitty annoyances. More so for me is the actual need to swipe. Yeah, swiping's cool, but if you're doing a presentation and you're, you know, queuing even individual animations or whatever, it kind of makes more sense, at least for me, to hit a button or just tap, you know?
And I'd like to be able to do a double tap or something.
But just swiping. And I think you actually have to make a full swipe. You can't just do like a little itty bitty swipe either, because it'll just say, oh, you didn't mean to do that.
I've had pretty good luck just swiping with my thumb, you know, holding my iPhone in one hand and swiping with my thumb.
Yeah.
Which isn't a full swipe, but but it's more than just a little nudge.
And I think there's something to be said about, you know, oh, look at that guy. He's using his iPhone to do his presentation. That's cool.
Okay, if they're doing that, you're doing your presentation wrong.
Okay, good point. Maybe afterwards they're talking about your iPhone. Anyway,
afterwards is fine.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just, you know, and that and the fact that you have to look down at your phone to figure out what you're doing, it kind of looks like you're looking at note cards. I mean, that's what it kind of amounts to. I prefer to do it where I have my MacBook sitting in front of me, you know, whatever, 20 feet or whatever in front of me, 10 feet. I don't have any depth perception. Anyway, you know, so far in front of me that it doesn't look like I'm reading from a note card, but it's in front of me so I can, you know, just kind of make a little bit of an eye, you know, direction change and look down and see what I'm going to be looking at next and kind of glance at my notes if I have any notes, and then just kind of clicking with my Apple remote. You know, my MacBook Pro didn't come with an Apple remote, but I made sure to buy the Apple remote for my presentations because I, you know, that honestly works so well. You don't even have to point it at the computer. So, you know, not for everybody. And I should write up a review for that. And I'm taking a big gulp of water from my quick.com water bottle that I got. I went to the Quick offices.
Nice.
Delicious Quick water. And so, yeah, that was cool to see the Quick guys, just as a little random aside. Got to go to the Quick offices with Daniel Brusilovsky. So follow Daniel at, was it Daniel Brew, I think, on Twitter. And so he's got the good hookups. We went down to Quick and Apple and got to go to Twitter, too. Meet Biz. That was awesome.
So how was Twitter?
Oh, it was just like, it was magical. I mean, there really wasn't anything going on there that was actually magical, but it was just like, we are at Twitter, guys.
The weird thing is every conversation you have at the Twitter office has to be done in 140 characters or less.
Yeah, that was weird. It was kind of like going into Willy Wonka's factory, and that was one of the stipulations as far as speaking. But it was cool. So what were we talking about? Macworld stuff. Do you guys have anything cool to mention from that you guys saw at Macworld?
Just from Macworld in general?
Yeah. Sling Media had their Slingbox application that they're going to be bringing to the iPhone. I think at the end of the quarter, I think is what they said. Basically, just a Sling Catcher, I guess that's what they would call it, because the Slingbox is something that allows you to stream your, you know, your home TV to the internet, so you can grab it with your laptop wherever you are, so you can watch home TV or TiVo or whatever you have going on at home right on your laptop. So if you're traveling or whatever, so they're going to be bringing that to the iPhone. It looked like a great application. And easy to use.
Everybody's going gaga over the new Fast Mac battery.
You know what's funny about that is they introduced it last year.
I know, it's bizarre. But you know the one really cool thing about it, and I have to give him credit for that, because we were at Jillian's, and I think Victor Cahiao from Typical Mac User and Scott Bourne and a bunch of people had them. The light on there, although you will blind your subjects and they'll never be able to again.
Yeah.
But it really does help with the low light problems that the iPhone built-in camera has. I mean, you can kind of honestly power through them with that light.
I haven't tried it yet, but I hear they gave me one, of course. But, you know, I think Leo Laporte was saying how maybe he didn't use it, but he was definitely saying, you know, it'd be a great thing for Quick, you know, if you're using Quick. But obviously it's great for anything that you're doing with the camera as far as, you know, low light. Because, you know, I've had a couple occasions where I'm, you know, out. Side and it's dark and I want to take a picture of something, and of course there's just really no way to do that, so the light thing is cool. It's a huge battery pack, though.
You can certainly blind them.
Yeah, you can. There's not a laser pointer on this one. That's just the Richard Solo, right?
That's the Solo, yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what kind of cool iPhone things I saw.
Things was there, right? Those guys were there. I gave them an award. Jeff.
Oh, so did I.
Yeah, you did too. And then we both gave an award to the Omni Group for OmniFocus on the iPhone too.
Right.
So they both won awards. Let's see, Beehive. We gave them an award for Beehive IM, their 2.0 version, which just kind of blew me away, because at first, you know, Beehive IM is probably, I think, the best instant message client on are available for the iPhone. I think even if you're just an AIM user, which is, you know, all I use, if you're just using AOL and nothing else, it's a fantastic application. I mean, there are a few, you know, things that I don't necessarily like, but for the most part, it's great. And with the 2.0 stuff, they added address book integration. So now, actually, it didn't come with the 2.0, but it came in, like, I think the most recent update. So if you use iChat and you associate your buddy names with people in your address book, so you don't have a bunch of buddy names, instead you have their actual name, which is something that I do, that is actually pulled from your address book database that's synced over from either, you know, MobileMe or, you know, just from syncing. So it'll pull that out of there, and so everybody gets their name. And you can do file transfers. So if someone sends you something, you know, just drags in a Word document or a, you know, whatever, anything that the iPhone can natively read, so an image, a Word document, some QuickTime files, audio files, that kind of stuff, if someone sends you that through IM, you can play that back or view it with Beehive IM. And also you can take and send photos with Beehive. And so that was one of the cool things, some cool software. TinyTown was awesome for for us anyway, because I think it was all iPhone stuff. I don't think there was one thing back there that wasn't for the iPhone.
Another good one, it's more business-oriented, small to medium-sized business. I talk to him every year because he's just an interesting guy, AJ from Market Circle. They do a product called Daylight and another one called Billings. They had a new app for the iPhone called Daylight Touch. And what Daylight is, it's like, they call it a business productivity management software.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes one level above just like task management into business management. It's a lot like...
Yeah, business and project like management
CRM
stuff.
Or Salesforce.com or something like that. Yeah, where you can have all your contacts and things. And their iPhone app is really nice. I think they won a Macworld Best in Show from Macworld.
I honestly would have given them an award probably if I wasn't so late, because I think I missed their meeting with them. And, you know, of course I was sick and I didn't know what was going on, you know, all the drugs and whatnot. But I did at some point get a chance toward the end of the expo to check out their application. One, beautifully designed, fantastic application. Makes a lot of sense as far as the layout. And it just looks like something where I kind of wish I was working with a giant team of people to try and accomplish something so I could use that application.
Yeah, I mean, their sweet spot is kind of, you know, businesses 5 to, I think, like 50 people. You know, it's not designed for a huge enterprise level system. But, you know, if you have a sales force, you know, 5 people, 10 people, something like that, it's ideal because they can pull up all of their information. They have a little server that you run. The iPhone can call back to it. It can get tasks and things like that. You can add stuff into it. It's really pretty incredible. And I agree, what blew me away about it was this stuff is really complex and there's a lot of levels and layers to it. And to get that on an iPhone screen, they did a really nice job of figuring out the layout and the areas and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Do you guys see that sound clip thing from the guys who make, I can never remember the name of the company, but they make the iPhone stylus. They have this cool thing now.
Pogo.
What's that?
The Pogo stylus.
Yeah, but I can't remember what the name of the company. Of course, I keep forgetting that I have internet that can actually load this stuff up now. 10-1 design. They make the Pogo stylus. And so it's $8 for this thing called the Sound Clip. And so have you guys ever been, you know, watching a YouTube video, either like in public and showing someone something or whatever, and you cup your hand at the speaker so you can hear it, so you can kind of direct the sound up to where you are? This does that. It's a little itty bitty plastic thing that kind of grabs on inside the dock connector and just, you know, directs the sound up. I'm not sure how well it works. I have one. I haven't really tested it that much, but it's a neat little thing. $8. Of course, I had the Pogo.
One that I tested that's similar to that, but it's more of a desktop application, is from Griffin. It's actually been out for a while, called the Air Curve.
The Air Curve, yeah.
Yeah, so I got one of those to test out, and it works surprisingly well. If you're an office, a quiet office, you know, it's not for a big room, but it's it's just a channel, basically just amplifies. It almost looks like an ear when you look at it. It's a, you know, clear dock station, and then inside it looks like it has this little coil. But it significantly amplifies the sound, you know, enough where you could hear it. They said the number one application they were getting for it were people who want to use their iPhone, the alarm with music to wake themselves up, by their bedstand, and it's amplified enough that, you know, you can actually hear it enough to wake you up.
And it sounds enough like a gramophone that it would be annoying enough to wake you up. It's a really cool product, but it sounds like a gramophone.
That solves the problem for the 3G iPhone is they have the Clarify case that has a macro lens that you can slide in and out built into the case.
Oh, yeah, I have one of those.
That's what
awesome.
I was trying to remember. Yes. Yeah.
That's great for Evernote. If you're an Evernote user, or you're just one of those people who want to, you know, for me, the big application with Evernote, the one thing that I saw for it that never really kind of worked because of the, you know, lack of focus on my eyesight and on the iPhone is, you know, taking pictures of receipts, because who wants to just, you know, carry around receipts and, you know, find a place for that? You guys probably already have a system for that, but I try not to work with paper. Just because I'm goofy like that. But that actually works really well for taking a picture of a receipt and then just being able to do a search for anything, literally anything on that receipt in Evernote. You can find it because, you know, I haven't really played that much without the lens, but with the lens, you're almost guaranteed, because it's a macro lens, that you're going to get all the information clearly off of that, you know, receipt or document or whatever you're taking a picture of. So the Griffin Clarify is another really cool product. The iFi, did you guys see check out what iFi had? They have a...
didn't get over to see them this year, but I talked to them last year. Their stuff is very cool.
Yeah, they have the iFi wireless SD card thing, so it lets you wirelessly sync all over your photos. So now, and it's totally slipping my mind how exactly this works, but it's an iPhone application basically that lets you sync your photos that you take on your phone and just kind of wirelessly get those off immediately without having to actually plug in your phone and pull it off and, you know, however people do it on Windows, I'm that ignorant, or, you know, use image capture or iPhoto or whatever. You can just wirelessly get those off onto your, I believe there's a way to do that. There's a little desktop client that you can grab that with your, with your desktop, or you can send that up to like a mobile me, or you can even send it up to a Flickr. So that was a really cool... sync them wirelessly with iPhoto on the Mac, and it also lets you automatically upload to one of 25 different photo sharing websites, including Flickr. So that was cool. I don't know if that's available right now. Arnold, I know you saw the other thing that was kind of like the Griffin thing.
There was I forget the name of it, but there was another. It was a little less attractive, I think. Than
it was
the Griffin
huge.
One. Yeah, but it worked. You know, you could tell it worked just from standing on the floor. Actually, hang on. But it's the same idea: amplifier, acoustic, non-powered amplifier to try to, for alarm clocks and whatnot. Amplophone was what it was.
Yeah, amplophone. It was a big old
like a
acoustic. It looked
was
like
that
a horn.
One that looked like a big megaphone,
yes,
sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He just showed it to me and I just, oh man, it was cool, but I just had to keep myself from laughing just because it was just, you know, like that thing is huge, dude. And,
the one thing that I saw that I think is going to be really prevalent, and it's probably two, three years out, but I think they're going to have a version of this available, this year, I believe, is, did you guys see the Microvision Pico projector?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
The itty bitty, it's a laser projector, and it's a little bigger, just like as far as width and thickness, it's as big as an iPhone. It's a little longer than an iPhone.
About the thickness of a deck of cards or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a little laser projector, and you can plug it in. I think right now they had just like an S-Video type plug-in, but they were planning in the future, you know, when they release it, to have, I think, modular type plugs, so you can have like an iPhone or like a dock connector.
The standard today. You use the standard, connector. You can get AV connector for your iPhone, and their original focus is going to be on doing video stuff and photo slideshows and things like that. And you know, you have to be in a pretty dark room,
and you can't get very far.
Have the lumens to blow through. But the one application that I thought would be incredible that they pointed out a lot of people are liking is, you know, you're laying in bed at night, and how many of us have taken your iPhone and you're like trying to hold it up and your arm's getting tired, you're watching a movie or something like that. You can plug this thing in and project in a totally dark room an amazing image up to like 100 inches off of your iPhone. So it's a projector. It's like a presentation projector, but and in a well-lit space, you know, we were in the convention hall, and I would say you could project, you know, a 17 to 20-inch image in a pretty well lit room and get pretty good, pretty good resolution. But the fall off is pretty big in you know, where you have a lot of ambient light. The fall off is such that you're not going to be able to get a huge image in a really bright room. But in a dark space, you know, completely dark space, you can get a really nice 100-inch image off this little tiny thing. And they said really their goal ultimately is to have this stuff built right in the engine. He was saying that's actually in there. Most of what that case is the battery, and the actual engine for driving it is super small. And they're hoping to have it integrated into mobile devices in the future.
Yeah. So you mentioned it's a you know, battery powered. So I think it'll last 2 hours is what they said. And when it's ready, they said summer, and around $400-$500.
Yeah, like, so not cheap.
Yeah, not cheap.
That's why I'm saying. I think that's a tech. That's one of those technologies you see at Macworld, and you're like, okay, this is the alpha. This is kind of the first commercial version of it.
Right.
And you know, 3 years from now, these things are going to be in our iPhones, and we're just going to be, you know, shooting images on the wall and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Let me just go through real quick the guys I gave awards to. I gave Icon Factory was there as well, which was awesome. I got to meet Chalk and Barry. I'm a fan of the Chalk Lock, if you guys know what that is. So they were there, and I gave them an award for Frenzic, because that's an incredibly addictive and beautiful game. Cultured Code, things. Griffin, I gave them an award for their Navigate product, and what that is essentially, it sounds stupid when I say it this way, but it's a remote for your iPhone, iPod, whatever, plugs into the dock connector, and it's not only just a remote, it actually has a really nice screen, black and white screen on there. It lets you see the artist and the song name. It lets you actually navigate through playlists and that kind of thing and find a song from that little remote. So you can keep your iPhone tucked away. And in fact, it allows you, you know, you folks with, you know, the colder months who wear gloves, you don't even have to pull out your iPhone. You can navigate stuff, you know, right there without even taking off your gloves. And it also has an FM tuner in it. So that's cool. I think it's $60 for the Navigate, and I'm not sure if it may be available now. I can't remember. Let's see. Codeflare. This was cool. This company were at Macworld last year, I think, working on a project that, what is the, Jeff, do you remember what the technology is? HyperCard. There we go.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
These guys. So they were working on like a HyperCard remake or a HyperCard clone. And what they came up with was something called TileStack. And it's an entirely web interface. And it allows you to, among other things, create iPhone applications without any prior programming training or experience at all. And so I gave those guys an award because it was just, you know, it just blew me away that, you know, first of all, it's web-based. You don't download anything. It's all, you know, Ajax-y. You build your application by connecting buttons to functions, and you're just kind of building it on, you know, they say each, you know, tile is like a slide, and you just kind of add stuff to it, and you can eventually make their main thing right now is games. And so I think they made, I can't remember what the example application was. I think it was either a poker or a solitaire game that they made. And so it allows you to export to dashboard for a dashboard widget, or you can have like a Facebook application or anything along those sort of lines. But if you want to make it into an iPhone application, you can also do that, and they'll publish it for you, and you'll get, you know, a cut of that. So that was really cool. What else did you guys see at Macworld that was cool?
You know, one of my favorites, and it sounds like the silliest thing, and it sounds like one of those things where, like, this really shouldn't be that inconvenient, and you should need this product to solve it, but everybody I mentioned it to loves it. A company called Mateus had a cable called the Tune Blocker.
Oh, yeah.
That was a very cool cable.
Yeah, and so it's an iPod connector on one end and a USB connector on the other end, you know, standard iPod 30-pin docking cable. But in the middle, there's a switch. and it has a sync logo on one side and a charge logo on the other. And if you have the cable flipped to the charge logo, that cable will only charge. So when you plug in your iPhone and you're plugging it into a computer that's not the one you sync with, you flip it to that switch and iTunes isn't going to pop up. iPhoto isn't going to pop up. It's not going to ask you, hey, this iPhone is synced. Do you want me to erase all the data? All those things aren't going to happen because it's only going to charge. It takes away the syncing capability. And if you want to have it be a sync cable, you just flip the switch the other way. Simplest thing, but it solves that annoyance. And, you know, I've talked to some people like, you know, come on, how inconvenient that is. But we've all been there and you're like, I just want to charge my phone and all these things are popping up.
Yeah, I did see that. And that was very cool. Product. And of course I got everybody's, you know, half the people I talked to about it were just like, wait, can't you just turn off automatic syncing in iTunes? And then, yeah, sure you can, but like, you know, you
but
explained
that is not that point.
You depicted the perfect scenario though, going to someone else's house and saying, you know, can I use your MacBook to charge my iPhone or whatever? Exactly. And you don't want all that garbage to pop up. So yeah, it's that huge of an inconvenience, and you can get around it, but you know, it just makes life a little bit more easy.
Well, okay, here's another scenario for that. Let's say you're someone like me where your iTunes library is on an external hard drive and you don't travel with that drive. So when you're out and about and on the road and you want to charge your iPhone, you don't want it to try and sync to iTunes because there's nothing there. So why not be able to just flip a little switch? You can still plug from your laptop and you're not going to have to worry about iTunes launching and not being able to find your library and not having anything to sync over.
Right. one other thing that I saw was the Tap It For Me. And I'm a huge user of Text Expander on the Mac. And I've harassed, who is it, Gene?
Yes, mm-hmm. That would be Gene.
I've harassed Gene quite a bit on the Twitter about, you know, getting a Text Expander on the iPhone because I love Text Expander so much. Excuse me.
That's something that Gene really wants on the iPhone too.
Yeah. So if for those who don't know, Text Expander is just kind of you set up little text shortcuts that allow you to, you know, type a lot more than what you want. And I think a really good example of that is if you want to, you know, for some reason you type pi, you know, the actual numbers out. Every, you know, for whatever reason, you can set up a shortcut that's, you know, maybe dash PI. And then instead of typing that out, it'll, you know, spit out, you know, however many decimals of pi you set up, you know, you pre-pasted into Text Expander. Or you can do stuff like, you know, for me, it's a lot of signature stuff. That's one of the, you know, if I'm talking to someone and I, you know, If it's one context, I don't want to leave one signature, or if it's, you know, a personal email, I don't want to say, you know, Michael Johnston, iPhone Alley, Twitter name, blah, 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 blah. You know, all that stuff. You want to have, you know, just, you know, ad hoc signatures. So I just have a little keystroke that I have for whatever, you know, that happens to be. So moving on to what Tap It For Me is, it's really just kind of a text expander. They actually have a Mac version of Tap It For Me. It's the same, or I guess it's Type It For Me on the desktop. So Tap It For Me is on the phone. And it really only works with with email right now, but that, to be honest, seems like the only place I would really need a text expansion application. So they let you set up whatever you know, shortcuts you want in Tap It For Me, and then you can... Let's see here. Yeah, you set that up, and then you go into your compose section, do your shortcut, you know, write out your email and whatever you need, you type out the shortcut, and then so once your email is done, you hit the, you know, the go button or whatever, and it'll send that over into the mail application ready for you to email out. So that was a very cool application. Pricing hasn't been announced for it. So did any of you guys go to the town hall meeting?
Yes.
So,
Macworld?
Yeah.
I did not.
So basically that was, you know, because, you know, Apple has pulled out saying this is their last year. You know, Paul Kent and everyone else at Macworld wanted to have a town hall meeting to, you know, with everyone who, you know, is open to any attendee to come and discuss what they wanted Macworld to become. So, Jeff, you went?
I did, yes.
I did not. So let us know what happened there. What was it like?
All right. Well, the first part was the part that I enjoyed the most, which was where Paul stood up and just laid everything out on the line and said, here's what's transpired. Here's what we're doing. Here's how we're envisioning the expo moving forward. And so in a nutshell, what Paul Kent and he's the guy that actually makes Macworld Expo happen, and then he has all of his minions under him that follow through with his vision for him. What he wants to see happen is that the event becomes something that's far more interactive for everyone that goes, that there's like art shows and different types of competitions and things that appeal to the different parts of the Mac community, and then by extension the iPhone community as well, so that you can have these things that people can get involved in, like making videos and then showing off what they've been working on, and then having more in the conference side that relates really to what people want to do. And then I guess they've had ideas of things that they've wanted to do for years, but Apple, even though it's not their event, they've had a lot of control over what does and does not go on.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things that they haven't been able to do because their hands are tied, they're going to be able to start doing those. So that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. I think one of the big, ideas, and I've heard Andy Notko talk about this a lot, is I think this is one of the topics actually most discussed at the at our Backbeat dinner that Jeff, you were at. Adam, did you make it to that?
No, I had flown back by that, or had flown back by at that point. I had
drank something for you.
Yeah. So basically the big topic, of course, was that. And Andy and Dave were Dave Hamilton were both talking about, what that would be. And Andy was really laying out that, it should be a giant event, where everything's open to, everyone, and where, I hear this person's talking about this. Let's go over there and check that out and listen to this, speaker talk about this. And then, okay, let's take a break and go check out, some of the products in the expo, not really hall, but expo area, because everything's, one giant area. And that was kind of validated by what Dave was saying. And it makes a lot of sense is there are really two different parts to Macworld, and it's definitely been seen now in the last couple of years because they've moved out to two different halls now. I think that in the West Hall, that's where, or Moscone West, actually, they even moved, that's where they moved all the sessions, right, Jeff?
There were some sessions in Moscone West, but not all of them.
Okay, so for what Dave pointed out,
my session was in the North Hall.
Okay. But yeah, so what Dave really pointed out was that a lot of people just kind of go to one area if they're doing sessions, or if they're doing expo, they'll go to that area and they're going to stay there and they're going to spend their entire day there. They may even spend the entire week there and not even, get the expo, or may not even get the, the talks or whatever. I assume people who pay for the talks would probably just go there and not really pay that much attention to the expo hall. And he really found that out when he was doing a podcast in the North Hall. He was doing a podcast somewhere, and he said, how many of you, were at my talk earlier? And nobody raised their hand, because they were all, either in the expo hall or they were over listening to the sessions. So that makes a lot of sense as far as, I think, one of the ideas would be to just kind of bring it all together. And I don't know how, space would work for that. Macworld is most likely just going to become a smaller event, and it would make a lot more sense. It would become much more community driven. I think a lot of the people who come for a Macworld are drawn there for the Apple stuff, for the new announcements. And these are people who don't necessarily travel for Macworld, but they're maybe more Bay Area people who just pay the $15 or whatever to get into the expo hall. So it may, it's just interesting to think about what Macworld could become, depending on what the focus really is, because, to most people, the focus is Apple. And when I talk to people who've never been, I say, I'm going to go to Macworld for a week. They say, well, I mean, isn't the keynote only 2 hours on a Tuesday? And they don't really realize that it's more than just Apple.
That's a really good point. And yeah, you're right. There's a lot of people that think Macworld is a one-day event, and most of it's televised with the keynote, and then that's it. We all go home.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see. You guys have any other comments on how you feel about Macworld? Obviously, we threw a party. Arnold and I threw a party. Because it was the we call it the Macworld finale bash, just, you know, because we wanted to throw a party, even though it, you know.
Right. I don't see how Macworld can really continue. And I mean, it certainly won't continue in the same form. And then really, the question is how they're going to be able to. My issue or my concern about Macworld in the future is that it will become a sort of a geek oriented events, like like a Star Trek convention, or there's, you know, if you, I don't know if you all have heard about Kansas Fest.
No.
Yeah, well, that's the Apple II convention that still goes on in Kansas somewhere, and I've never been. And but you know, there's no reason for you to go really, unless you are a diehard Apple II guy.
Right, Jeff. So have you been?
Actually, I just wrote down Kansas Fest so I can go look it up later. I didn't even know there was such a thing.
I think it's still going on, but you know, no one, there's no coverage. There's no, I mean, but my point being is that if the random passersby stop coming, like the non-hardcore, you know, not the Andy Inokos or the, you know, the iPhone Alley guys, like if you have no, you know, people go to Macworld now because they want to see the iPhone, and they walk by all these other booze, and you know, the vendors are happy because they get a lot of exposure. But if that component's gone and you're just really preaching to like the hardcore Mac fans, and you know, then you're gonna lose the vendors, and then it's just gonna become sort of a niche event, which is my concern. So I mean I enjoy it, and you know, I enjoy meeting the other niche people, but that's I'm not the typical Macworld attendee, I don't think.
All right, I have to jump back in for a second because I have the interwebs also. I just looked up Kansas Fest. Sure enough, it is still going on, and it's in Kansas City, Missouri. So that's where I'm from.
Oh.
So maybe I'll have to go see Kansas Fest 2009.
What time of the year is it?
Let's see. July 21st through the 26th. It's at Rockhurst University in Kansas City, Missouri.
How many days is it? Is it just one?
The 21st through the 26th. So what is that? 5 days.
Wow.
Jeff, you should, you know, those backpacks that they give to the Justin.TV guys,
mm-hmm.
You should get one of those and put on the hat and like live stream for 5 days from Kansas Fest, giving your commentary, of course, on everything going on and interviewing all the people.
Of course.
Of course.
And you realize a lot of that will happen from the barbecue places, because my opinion is that the best barbecue in the world comes from Kansas City. And, of course, all of our listeners from Texas and New Orleans are probably going to start flaming me right away on that.
What's your email address,
too, but Jeff? It's not Kansas City. I'm sorry, what?
What's your email address so I don't have to forward the emails?
I should make up a new one just for that, shouldn't I?
Jeff Flaming emails at Mac Observer. I don't know. But yeah,
that's it.
That's it. Okay, so moving on. We've been talking for a while, and I have a lot more on the list, but we'll save that for next week, because we're gonna stay in the groove, because it seems like every time we miss a week or two, we can't get it back together. So next week we have plenty of stuff to talk about. So let's move on to our iPhone picks. Jeff, what do you have?
I have, let's see if I can get the pronunciation right. It's called EcoCal, and it's this amazingly, this is my favorite find at Macworld Expo, and it was at the little pavilion booth things. And it's from a company called Antenna Theater. And what it is, it's kind of an interactive calendar for 2009. And it doesn't just show you the date. It also gives you information about the season, information about what's going on that day, in a world sense, not like in a political or a religious sense. It's, you know, it's it ties back to nature, and so it gives you these nice little graphic representations of how long the day is, what the phase of the moon is, what type of weather you can expect, and then you can tap on different things in the in these amazingly beautifully rendered graphics that they have, and then get information about whatever that is. You can see where what stars are going to be visible, when there's going to be meteor showers, just tons of stuff in here. Just it's amazing, and the artwork that they have is just absolutely beautiful. So EcoCal, that's my pick.
And that's $5.99 in the App Store.
Yeah, and actually, I have a couple codes you can give away for that if you want.
Oh, cool. Well, we can. I actually have a bunch of other codes that we're going to be talking about in a minute, so we'll see if we can roll that in there.
Cool.
So, Adam, what do you have?
I have an application, a drawing application called Brushes. And what amazed me about this application, because I've looked at a couple different drawing applications, doodling applications and stuff on the iPhone, what I liked about this one is it really takes on kind of a painting metaphor better than any other applications that I've seen. So, and it also really uses a lot of the multi-touch features that are in the iPhone. So you can do things like, you click on an area, you hold your finger down, and you can actually sample colors from an existing image. You can, you know, then change the size of your brush. You can do the whole pinch, zoom in and out thing. If you use two fingers, you can scroll around the canvas.
You can get a color wheel.
You can move outside the canvas, so you can kind of extend the canvas. And I was just, what got me to buy the app, which I think it's $1.99 on the App Store, you can find it at brushesapp.com, and there you can see a video of some people doing some drawings, and there's actually people that upload and share some of their paintings and things like that, and some of them are just really incredible, and it kind of inspired me, making me want to like figure out, you know, how to do this. So I've been playing around with it, just doing really basic, almost like Art 101 painting studies now, where, you know, I'm just trying to create a sphere on a surface, and you can control the transparency, you can sample colors, you can just working with it feels a lot like working with a palette and a brush, but you're doing the whole thing with your finger. So
that looks really cool. I think I got a promo code for Brushes. I think I'm going to check that out for a review. I have so many applications. It's insane. But it's $4.99.
$4.99.
Yep. You may have gotten it on sale.
I think I got it on sale. I think, yeah.
And there's actually
iPhone apps on sale. Have you noticed that? Like,
yeah, the price has changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The price has changed all the time.
You would know, Arnold.
Yeah.
What is it? App Shopper?
Yeah.
AppShopper.com. Awesome, awesome site. Check that out.
Well, it's worth it even at $4.99. I mean, if you want to do, you know, painting or stuff and you want to use it on the iPhone, it's the first one that I found that kind of goes beyond just, oh, this is a fun doodle kind of paint app, where it becomes like, oh, this application was really designed for somebody who's an artist who wants to see what creating artwork, you know, using just a touch interface on the iPhone, you know, might like.
Absolutely. Okay, so.
Yeah, no, it looks nice.
Brushes, $4.99 in the App Store. And there's actually, it looks like there's a Brushes video you can check out on YouTube. Apple needs to fix this where, you know, you can't copy any text out of App Store descriptions and there are no links. That's kind of irritating that you have to type out a URL. But there's
the other feature that's nice, by the way, is you can pull in an existing photo and then sort of paint on top of it as well.
No, that's so, right. So you can learn from that. Or whatever, or just add and, you know, spice it up or whatever. There's also a Flickr group for it. So that's cool. All right. So who else do we have? Arnold.
Yes. I am going to, surprisingly enough, go with a game because that's all I really do on that. And actually, I was actually just reviewed this game. It's called Gemmed, G-E-M-M-E-D, ! And it's actually, and I'm going to say it hesitantly because I know people are going to tune out after I say it's a match three game, but, I've gotten bored of match three games. So it actually says something that I'm even mentioning it, but it's I mean, the reason that I like the game is the goal is not to just match as many three gems together as possible, because eventually you get tired of that and you're just wasting time. But the there's actually these little monster characters that are on the board that will eat the same color gem as they are and try to move to an exit. So your goal is to try to get those to the exit by moving the gems around, you know, and matching gems and sort of making them fall and trying to corral these monsters to the right exit. And it's actually surprisingly fun. And there's a light version that shows the game well, which you can download for free. And then the actual game is only 99 cents for the next couple of days, is on sale. Normal price is $2.99.
Until February 1st.
Yeah. So I'm not sure when this podcast broadcasts, but
hopefully be out tomorrow.
Try to get it.
Try and get it. Gemmed, GEMMED !! There's the it's 99 cents right now. There's a light version if you don't get it in time. And so I guess it's my turn to give a pick. So I'm gonna go with two, because it's been a while and I've seen a lot of cool stuff since we last did the whole pick thing. So my first one is iStat for the iPhone, and this was exciting for a few reasons when I saw it come out. The obviously the first reason is it's a gorgeous application, and I'm ADD, and so shiny things really intrigue me on the iPhone. So if you guys, for Mac users anyway, you guys have probably heard of iStat for your Mac, and it's just one of those applications that lets you know what's going on with your Mac as far as disk space, as far as processor utilization, memory use, temperatures of various parts of your Mac, as far as processor, GPU, different spots, you know, whatever temperature sensors are there, fan speed, uptime, all that geeky stuff that you want to know. So you can have that obviously on your Mac and you can check that out. But if you have a server, for example, that you monitor and you're not necessarily there all the time, you can use iStat as a remote management or a remote viewing application. You can remotely view your iStat from your iPhone. You have to have a server, an iStat server, running on your Mac. And honestly, once I installed it on my Mac, I don't even realize that it's on there. There's no menu bar icon. There's no dock icon. There's nothing. So it's actually quite transparent, and I like it that way because, you know, I'm already using menu meters. But this is cool for remote checking. And it has Bonjour support in there. So you don't necessarily have to have a remote server. You can just be lazy on the couch and say, oh, I wonder what my Mac's doing. You know, if it's rendering a video, for example, or if you're a programmer and it's, compiling and you want to check out when it's done compiling, so you can check that out. Of course, it does the remote server too, so you can check that out just by doing port forwarding and all the other magic that you have to do. But the coolest thing, I think, even cooler than that, the reason I have this application is because it gives you a bunch of information about your iPhone itself. So you can check out memory usage on your iPhone. You can check out disk usage, your IP address for both Wi-Fi and the cell network. It shows you both, regardless of what network you're on. Gives you the uptime, the load, your unique identifier. So if you're, you know, one of those people who does beta testing, or if you're just a developer and you need to give out your unique ID, you can check that out there. You can even email it. You can, let's see, you can also email your MAC address if that's something you need to do. I can't think of why you'd need to do that. But the coolest thing for me about this part of the application is that you can free memory on your iPhone. There's just a button there that says, you know, free memory. You hit it. It cautions you at first. It says, you know, your phone may, you know, freeze up for a moment as you're doing this. But, you know, I just, you know, I'm a memory management crazy person. I'm crazy about it. I reboot my Mac just, you know, almost every day. As soon as it gets to the point where it starts, you know, paging stuff out, or swapping, I guess it is in the Unix. As soon as that happens, I reboot. So I'm crazy about the memory, and, you know, everybody has noticed at some point their iPhone getting sluggish, and, you know, reboot and that fixes it. So this allows you to free up the memory. I'm assuming that's the reason why stuff gets sluggish on your phone. And that seems to work. As soon as I hit the free memory button, and I can go about my business. Everything's just so much snappier, and you know, you're kind of going against the whole, oh, OS 10 will take care of your, you know, memory management stuff. But then again, developers can get lazy, because I think I may be wrong, but I've been told that developers actually have to take care of releasing their memory footprint or allocation or whatever as they exit. I'm not sure about that, but it's very cool. I don't remember how much it cost. Do you guys remember how much the iStat is?
I'm looking it up right now. It's $1.99.
Yep. So it's an awesome application. Very pretty. Works well. Has the free memory button. If anything, buy it for the free memory button. That thing is awesome. Have you guys tried that?
I've not.
Not yet.
Try it. It is awesome. The free memory thing just makes me so happy, because I'm weird about that kind of thing. So I also want to talk about Tweety. It's my new favorite Twitter client. I've been a fan of Twitterific for a long time. That's one of Craig Hockenberry's creations. So I love the Icon Factory and Craig Hockenberry. But at some point I found Tweety, and it's so much better for so many reasons. The interface itself, I think, is much cleaner. It's a fantastic look, and it's just got so much fit and finish on it. For example, if you swipe left to right on a tweet, you'll get this little quick link thing. So it pushes the tweet away, and then you can hit reply. You can hit an icon that lets you check out their information, or you can just quickly favorite a tweet or something like that.
So if you're left-handed, you can swipe right to left.
Yes, you can. You can swipe either way, but the animation looks cooler.
The animation goes the right-handed way all the time.
Yes. Maybe that's something she'll change later on. I'm on the beta team, so I get to complain and not be... I don't offend the developer. That's why I like being a beta tester, because I'm really vocal about things that I don't like. And if you're a beta tester and you complain about stuff, they love you for it. So, because they love the feedback. It scrolls. I'm going to take this from Steve. It scrolls like butter. scrolls. It's just fantastic. It just does not skip, jump at all. It's perfect. And I think the best part about it is, at least for me, and there are many different uses for it, but the best part is how deep you can get and how you can look at just all the different aspects of, what's going on in Twitter. So, for example, if you see someone who's replying to someone else and it's part of a conversation, if you click on that tweet, it'll show you, a full screen representation of that tweet with all the links and everything clickable. There's actually a little button that'll show up that'll say, in reply to, so-and-so. You click that button, it'll do a page curl up, and you'll get to see what the original tweet was. And if it's a tweet conversation, you can just keep curling up pages and checking that out. It's very cool. Like I said, you can click links right there, and it has an inline browser, so you don't have to go to Safari. If you're throwing out tweets with TwitPic links in there, it'll show up a little image saying, hey, this is an image, and you can click that, and it'll actually just pull up the image. It won't even give you the ugly TwitPic interface. It'll just show you the image, so you're kind of not loading as much as, you're not loading extra stuff. On top of that, if you're looking at any tweet, or you can just, do that cool little gesture, you can look at someone's information right from Tweety, so it'll slide down the tweet that you were looking at. It'll say, this person has, 1,000 followers, and they, their location is this, and all that stuff that you would see normally on the page. You can hit a button that'll show you all their recent tweets. You can search for, anybody mentioning the person. You can look at all the people that they follow, all their followers. You can send them a public reply, a direct message. You can block or unblock them right there, or stop following them or follow someone. There's just so much stuff, so much useful stuff in such a great, it's just laid out so well that you can get to everything, and everything kind of makes sense, that it just makes Twitter so much more powerful. And I use Twitterific on the desktop. I'm compelled sometimes to just use my phone, because it just has so much more power. as far as getting around Twitter, because you can, you know, you can search for, you know, any keyword right from your phone. You can search for, you know, anybody talking about someone, you know, using at replies or whatever. You can check out your favorites. And I mean, there's just so much stuff here. You can look at trends even. I haven't even checked that out. I'm just,
it's very cool.
The trends is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a very cool feature. But Michael, you left out the most important feature.
What is the most important feature?
The popularity enhancer.
Oh, thank you for reminding me of that. I have that down in my notes. I forgot. It's PEE, the popularity enhancer. And when you turn that on in the preferences, it adds a flashlight as well as a wet fart noises.
So it's a fart app, a flashlight, and a Twitter client all in one.
Win. I'm surprised they're not number one right now. It's the perfect combination. It's the perfect storm of iPhone applications. Yeah. So it's and I think it's cheaper than Twitterific, isn't it?
I don't know. You recommended it. I bought it. I love it.
Did you buy it just now?
No, I bought it at the Cirque de Mac party. When you were standing right with me, you said, "Oh, Tweety, forget it."
Oh yeah, yeah. I was doing that a lot. I did.
I was complaining that, you know, I was still using Holo, and you're like, "Why are you still using Holo?"
Yeah,
Tweet.
I'm so glad I got you off the Holo, even though I know you loved it. I was just kind of irritated that you were using a web interface thing. I'm glad you like Tweety.
I still wish Holo would make a Twitter client, because a native app, because I think they could do a great job of it. I mean, their UI up until, for many of the same reasons you're mentioning on, you know, with Tweety, and probably why I like it so much, is the UI is just so well thought out in terms of how you drill down into different sections and things like that. And so, you know, I still think the Holo UI as a app kind of taken to the next level, finessing some things here and there, could still be a really killer Twitter client.
Yes, I have not actually messed with Holo at all, but I'll take your word for it. Tweety is $2.99. Of course, Holo is free, so, you know, check out Holo. I'm not going to hate on Holo. So $2.99 is cheaper than Twitterific Premium, you know, if you can't stand the ads. Totally, totally worth it. If you're a Twitter person, get Tweety right now. Adam doesn't regret it, do you, Adam?
Not whatsoever. I use it. I mean, it's my now primary Twitter client on my iPhone, and I used to switch between. Honestly, I used to switch between Holo, Twitterific. You know, I was using three different ones. So I'd switch between Holo, Twitterific, and Twinkle. Mm-hmm. And now it's just all Tweety.
So, Adam, you're using Tweety. Jeff, are you using Tweety?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I brought it up to turn on the popularity enhancer feature because I hadn't done that yet.
Arnold,
yeah, that's in the settings, by the way. It was hard. I had a hard time figuring out how to turn it on. I read about the features, and I'm like, "Where? How do I enable it?" Well, you have to go into iPhone settings.
Yeah, it was funny in the beta releases. She goes, you know, and of course we've included the popularity enhancer, and she didn't really explain what it was. She just said it's there, and so it just kind of, I didn't understand what it was doing. So, Arnold, what are you using as far as a Twitter client on your iPhone? Just because we're taking a poll.
I have Tweety, but I haven't. I'm not as big a Twitter user, I think, as you all. I usually use it from my desktop. And not to offend you, but I still use just the web interface
for Twitter. Just the Twitter.com web interface.
Yep.
Gotcha. No offense whatsoever. okay, so $2.99 Tweety. It's by 8bits. It's awesome. It's got the popularity enhancer, all that stuff. It's the perfect storm. So we have some.
And I just blinded myself with the flashlight.
Can I give an honorable mention this week that I think we can't avoid, and we have to give this because I originally made fun of this and now I think it's like the coolest thing. Frosty Place.
Okay. I do not know what that is.
Oh my Lord, you guys do. Does anybody know about Frosty Place yet? Okay,
I guess we're about to learn.
Oh, wait. I know what this is. Okay,
it enables emoji.
Oh, yeah.
Without a hack on the iPhone. So without a jailbreak, you can get emoji, Japanese emoji icons on your iPhone using Frosty Place. It's 99 cents. You have to download the app. You don't have to keep it installed, but basically, you open up the app, play around with it a little bit. It's a I think it's a Taiwanese or a Chinese RSS reader, so you won't be able to read anything. But you have to open up the app, and then you have to use some of the you know, just read some of the articles, click on some of the articles. And then when you exit the app and you go back into your settings, into the keyboards, and then international, and then Japanese, you will see the switch to turn on emoji.
Here's the problem, though.
Once you've turned it on, then you have emoji in your SMS, in your email, and anywhere on the iPhone.
Yeah, I haven't done it yet, and actually it looks like I won't be able to do it because it doesn't work in 2.2.1 now. If it
doesn't work in 2.2.1 because it didn't go away.
Well, it doesn't go away, but you can't turn it on once you go to 2.2.1. So I am out of luck, and I feel like a
drat
dork.
The luck.
you know, I've been getting spammed by emoji
of poop with smiley faces to people, and yeah. that's a tragedy.
I've been spammed so much by people already with emoji.
But the good news is you can still view them. So when you can still see them.
Yeah, so if you really want to, you can actually downgrade your iPhone. If you're that willing to get emoji, you downgrade just using DFU mode and just restore using 2.2.0.
That's far too much work.
And
I think I'll just wait for them to
Frosty
update the
Place,
application.
And then you enable the emoji, and then you can upgrade to 2.2.1.
It does bring up the bigger question is why. I don't know why Apple just doesn't turn this on and let people.
I think it's because it's annoying.
Well, if I want to be annoying, I should have the right to choose that.
That's true. You should have the right, if you have the ability to send poop and a smiley face to someone, you should be able to do that. But yeah, so Frosty Place, 99 cents.
It's actually racial discrimination at this point in my mind that only Japanese people are allowed to have it.
That's
true. It's on my iPhone, but.
We should start an online petition.
Maybe that's what the iPhone 2.1 thing is for, just emojicons.
That's what it is, yeah. Arnold, do you have emojicons on your iPhone?
I have not enabled it. Okay. So can other phones read those?
No, it's any phone that can read emoji.
Yeah. But other US
anybody
phones, we don't
in
know.
Japan, I guess.
Well, anybody in Japan, yeah. And then any phone that reads emoji, I guess, will read it, and they'll render whatever, you know, not shiny image, you know, that they bring up for, you know, whatever poop looks like not on an iPhone.
Looks like text strings, I think.
Apparently it also works, like, if you browse in Safari to a website that has emoji on it,
yeah.
Safari on the iPhone will actually translate those as well.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're getting a lot of Twitter updates from people with like a bunch of boxes in them, check out those updates on like Tweety or whatever. On your iPhone, you'll see that, you know, they're little smiley faces instead of just boxes. So,
or apparently they can also be poop.
They can also be poop or a myriad of other things.
The amount of icons is what blew me away, frankly. Yeah. There's like pages and pages of these things.
Aren't there like different categories, and then within each there are like 10 categories, and then from within each category there are like tons and tons of pages of them.
Yeah. I mean, there's hearts, there's beer glasses, there's, you know, buildings, there's flags, there's a whole set that's just like arrows and clocks. And so like instead of, you know, meet me at 3 o'clock, you could actually send a clock with the handset to 3 o'clock.
What I really want to do is, as soon as I get it enabled, is write a little story to one of my friends using as few actual English words as possible. So
yeah, you probably could write a pretty good tale.
Yeah, and I'll send that to you, Jeff.
I can't wait.
Okay. All right.
Looking forward to it.
Frosty Place, if you haven't updated already, 99 cents. I guess the instructions are play around with it for a while and then it'll work. I think Justine is Eric.
It worked the very first time. All I did was launch the app, and actually I think it's a web service. So I think it connects actually to a website. And I think when I got it, everybody was hitting it so hard the website was actually down, because I tried to go to the website and I just got a bunch of, you know, SQL errors.
Yeah.
And my iPhone was displaying nothing. But the minute I launched the app and then went into the settings, I saw it. So I didn't have to play around with it at all. So
cool.
I don't know. Your mileage may vary.
Gotcha. All right. So I think that's it. We're on to our codes and giveaways and stuff like that. So we have a bunch of codes. I have a few codes for Beehive IM. as well as Frenzik, and I think I have one or two for Drink Wine. And so I was trying to figure out how we were going to give these away. And tell me if this sounds absolutely ludicrous to you guys, but I'm going to task all of our current listeners with getting more listeners for the podcast. So you guys tell your friends, and so we have maybe, I don't know, 3,000 some regular subscribers. If we get up to 4,000, and I don't know, that's not really ambitious at all. Not too ambitious. So if we get up to 4,000, here's the deal. Tell your friends and then tell me with Twitter. Tell me that you told one of your friends. Say, you know, just at Michael Johnston, I got one of my friends to subscribe. And don't cheat if you didn't actually go out there and tell your friends. But I'll pick one of you guys at random who told your friends. As soon as we get up to 4,000, I'll start giving out codes.
You should have them name the podcast in the tweet.
Name the podcast?
Or name iPhone Alley in the tweet, too.
So say, how do you mean?
I just meant so their followers would see.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Say, yeah, you can put out a link in there if you want, and then say, and then you'll get double points. Whatever. Sure. 4,000 subscribers. We'll just do that and see how that works out. If it doesn't work out, then I'll just do one of my ridiculous giveaways on Twitter.
The answer is pizza.
The answer.
All right, everyone. It's just pizza.
Jeff, you get a license to drink wine. How about it?
Sweet.
All right.
And I just sent you over a couple codes for EcoCal.
We'll give away some codes for EcoCal too. So we've got
a bunch. I think I can get you a couple more. So I sent you two. If you want four total, I think I can make that happen.
So yeah, if you want, in the tweet, specify which app you want. We have Beehive IM, Frenzik, Drink Wine, and EcoCal. So specify. And yeah, so we'll see how that works out. So, of course, check out iPhoneAlley.com for more news, tips, and reviews. If you have a tip for the iPhone you want to share with us, send us, use the contact link on the page. Or if you have a product or an application you'd like us to review, use that contact link. Our iPhone picks and show notes are at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. As soon as we get that up, I usually get that done either the night I post the show or sometime in the following day. If you have any feedback or if you want to frantically, you know, ask us where the podcast went, like many of you did, and we really appreciate that, you can send your feedback to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And once again, Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observers here. Thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us for another episode.
It's always a blast.
Twitter.com/JGamet is the Twitter. Follow him and harass him if you want. I don't know.
Yes, it's how I know people actually love me.
Yeah, harass. Send him replies. Just tell him you love him. Anyway, Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast, MacCast.com. And of course,
yes.
Twitter.com.
I was going to comment. I need more people to follow me because Soleil Moonfry just joined Twitter and she's like coming up fast on my numbers. So
how many followers do you have?
I cannot have Punky Brewster have more followers on Twitter than me.
Oh, that just hurts.
How many followers do you have right now, Adam?
I think it's somewhere around 4,000.
Okay, get Adam more followers.
Yeah, but I noticed she came on last just this week, and I think she's at like 3,700. So she's like gaining quick.
Yeah. And of course, you're Adam. Arnold Kim from Mac Rumors, of course, and the wonderful Touch Arcade, where he's reviewing and putting news up about all the best iPhone games, toucharcade.com, and App Shopper. So you can check out when all the deals are happening and when the new apps are on the App Store. So it's appshopper.com. Twitter.com/MacRumors is also his Twitter.
Actually, Arnold Kim, the MacRumors, is just our live feed.
Yeah, that's right. Arnold Kim. I'll put that. I wondered why that was in my notes. As I was saying it, I was going, what? That's not right. Twitter.com/ArnoldKim. You can follow, you know, MacRumors feed if you want. I should mention, We have a Twitter feed as well for the site, twitter.com/iPhoneAlley. So if you're not one of those RSS people, you just like to be bothered by an automated RSS robot on Twitter, you can follow twitter.com/iPhoneAlley, and it'll show you when there's new stuff on the site. And of course, my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And as an incentive for following me, and this sounds shameless, but whatever, people do actually send me promo codes just randomly saying, hey, can you give out some promo codes for, you know, whatever app on your Twitter? And, you know, so sure. And I'll make people guess, you know, what I had for breakfast and award them with a promo code.
Pizza. The answer is always pizza.
The answer has been pizza for several weeks now. So Jeff wins another copy of Drink Wine.
How about if I just get the wine?
We'll send you some wine. And sweet. With that, another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is out the door.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them.